Most people go to the same old job every day, doing the same things every day, barely getting by. But it doesn't have to be that way. This is the real path to BYOB. Be your own boss. Change your life through real estate. On this show, we'll have interviews and inspiration from people who've made it, bringing you real life stories to help you chart your own path to BYOB. This is the real path to BYOB. Be your own boss. And now, here's your host, Mun Sachapuri.
Welcome to The Real Path to BYOB, the show that aims to inspire you to achieve financial freedom and be your own boss. This is your host, Mansa Chapuri. Our guest for today's episode is Neil Bawa. He's a technologist who is universally known as in the real estate circle as the mad scientist of multifamily, besides being one of the most in-demand speakers in commercial real estate. He's a data guru, process freak, and an outsourcing expert. He treats his $250 million multifamily portfolio as an ongoing experiment in efficiency and optimization. He lives by two mantras. His first is that we can only manage what we can measure. And second is that data beats gut feel by a million miles. He also serves as the CEO at Grow Capitus, a data-driven commercial real estate investment company, and Multifamily U, an apartment investing education company. He's a top-rated in-demand presenter at conferences across the country and has been featured in over top 50 podcasts and radio shows. Welcome to the show, Neil.
Thanks for having me on the show, Manasa. Happy to be here.
So great to have you. So I know you've been a technologist, and I want to backtrack a little bit to your childhood. Like, was there ever a plan for you to work for yourself?
Not really. I think that, you know, the event in my childhood that really connects back to what I do as the mad scientist of multifamily was that when I was, I think it was 9 or 10, I was diagnosed as borderline autistic because, firstly, my family noted that I had amazing math skills. So I would basically solve math sums in my head. And then I was very non-social. So I was a withdrawn child. I'd basically look at things and say things that people would find odd. So I'd look at like a row of numbers and basically start tying that back to, you know, be back to the age of a tree or, you know, the clouds in the sky. Basically, I could see patterns in everything. And so they my dad was a fighter pilot. So they took me to the VA hospital in India, and there was a psychologist, and he basically went through this process with me for a while, and that fixed the problem. So at least I think it fixed the problem. So you make your own mind up about that. But what was interesting is that that ability to see patterns in numbers, it stayed with me, even though they managed to fix my grumpiness and, you know, the fact that I was antisocial, they fixed that. But the numbers ability stayed. And so throughout my life, I don't think that I've been a technologist. I don't think that I've been a real estate tycoon. I think I've always been a person that is in love with the power of numbers. And that, you know, drove me into my technology career when I was basically doing large network rollouts in the Bay Area for companies like Cisco, where we're basically, you know, plugging terabytes of data through these big pipes. A lot of that was math, right? So there was an incredible amount of math to do there. And then when I became chief operations officer of the company that I was working for, I was extremely math and data driven. So the company really ran by the numbers, and we ran that company for about 14 years, had a tremendous, phenomenal, very profitable exit to that. We sold to a private equity group in 2013. And my real estate career, I tell people this often, and sometimes it sounds a little flippant to say this, but it's really not. I tell people I'm running a data analytics company that is masquerading as a real estate company, right? Because what I'm really doing is I'm looking at numbers in different scenarios and basically trying to make optimizations to bottom line or net profit, right? Now, as it happens, what I'm doing that with at the moment is real estate. 5 years from now or 10 years now, I could be doing the same thing with a different career. So the approach that I take is not of technology, but it is of numbers, right? And as it happens, there's a lot of room for numbers people in the technology side, and there's a lot of room for numbers people on the real estate side. I do feel that there's not enough real estate people that are as numbers driven as they should be, but I think that there's a lot of room there to optimize and grow your portfolio or your company if you're doing that way. So no, not a technologist, more a math geeks, right? So I tell people, call me a geek, a nerd, or a dork, and I'll take all of those as compliments.
Interesting, very interesting. So what was that point where you used numbers in technology to using numbers in real estate? When did that switch happen? And what was the drive behind that?
I'll tell you one little story that led to that switch, right? So a little precursor that got me to that switching point. So 2003, I was running this technology company, 300 employees, very profitable business. And my CEO came back to me and said, you know what? We are not going to rent our own campuses. We're going to build them. And I said, great, because I thought he meant he was going to build it because he knew he had real estate experience and I didn't. And he came back and said, no, you build it. And I'm like, I haven't even rehabbed my own home. You want me to build a $6 million campus? I'm going to screw it up big time. And he's like, no, I know stuff. You know, I'll help you. And he did. I mean, obviously he knew a lot more than me. So all the key decisions were made by him for the first campus. But I got to basically build a campus from scratch under somebody's guidance that knew what he was doing. And really, and that first campus that we built elevated our business in a way that you cannot imagine. I mean, we were just all of a sudden better than every competitor out there because we had these custom campuses and they were built to optimize net profit. And so that got me into real estate in an odd sort of way, right? I mean, I actually bought a part of that building. And so I was, invested in it. And it got me into real estate because I realized just how powerful real estate is from a depreciation perspective. I had the big fat tech salary. I was making a lot of money. So, I'm in California, so I was paying 50% in taxes every year. So all of a sudden the depreciation was, pulling my taxation back. So I was like, wow, this is really great. Is this really legal? And it turned out that it was legal and you could save an enormous amount of money through depreciation. So that kind of got me into love with real estate. But by the time, and I was very busy because a company 2003, 2008, it was growing like crazy. So I was too busy to do real estate. But by 2008, when real estate started to crash, I was studying real estate. I was in like full study mode. And so people in my family are telling me, Neil, you're an idiot for buying real estate right now. This is the worst, time of any time to buy real estate and you're going to lose your shirt and blah, blah, blah. But what was odd, Manasa, was that when I was looking at the numbers, they were telling me the exact opposite of what all these people in my family and my friends were saying, because I was basically looking at it and said, when I look at numbers in December 2008, everything looks better than a year ago, right? But when they look at it, all they care about is that home that was worth $200,000 has dropped to $100,000. So they think that's bad, where my numbers show me that that's good, right? Because my basis is now $100,000. Because what I was paying careful attention to was that home prices in many cases had dropped by 70%. I'm in California, so portions of California dropped by 70%. But rents are dropped by 2%. So I'm saying, being a mathematician, how does it make sense that I'm paying half or a third of what I was paying a year ago, but I'm getting the same rents? And people are telling me it's really, really bad. I'm an idiot. I shouldn't do this. And so it became a passion and obsession to prove these people wrong, because I've always believed that numbers prove people wrong all the time, especially very experienced people that start going by their gut feel and that's when they go wrong. And so it became a sort of a fanatic obsession to prove people wrong. But at the same time, I was shit scared because I was like, maybe if I'm wrong, I'm going to take all of my savings and blow them all together on one thing. And so I really felt that I need to prove people wrong, but I also need to do it in a data-driven way so that if I lose all my money, I said, you know what? I stayed true to my data strategies. So I started doing research on where in the United States I should buy. And so what I did was I went to a Russian hacker and I said, spider the Zillow website for me and please do it slowly so that Zillow doesn't send the FBI to me. Right to my doorsteps. And the guy didn't listen to me. So the next day, like all the data from the Zillow website was sent to me in an Excel spreadsheet. And for the next 3 months, I was terrified that the FBI would show up, but they didn't. So I took this data and I organized it, and I looked at, you know, 2005 peak prices versus, you know, 2009 January trough. And basically I said, what cities dropped the most? Because one of the most popular things that I was learning in my research was, in real estate, when things go up, they go up too far. When they go down too far, right? So luckily, I live in California. 144 miles from me, a city named Madera had the highest drop in the United States. So the home prices had dropped 70%. So I went to Madera and I bought 10 single family homes, right? And once again, my family is basically not even talking with me at this point. They're thinking like, this guy's going to blow up all his money, and then we're going to have to pay for him, and he's going to be on the streets and blah, blah, blah. And they're just, you know, using F-bombs at me every time I meet with them. And I'm like, no, the numbers are going to prove me right. So the short answer was, I was proven right. And those 10 homes, I own them at this point. I've refinanced them. You know, they've made me millions of dollars. Of course, I went on to go buy more after that. But I think it really, to answer your question, the application of mathematics was tied to mining the Zillow website, looking at 3,300 cities and picking Madera, California, which nobody's ever heard of, by the way, as the one city that had dropped the most. Therefore, the one city that had room to rise the most, right? So those $90,000 homes that I bought are now $280,000. Some of them are over $300,000. So it was just pure mathemagic.
Wow, that is so incredible. Wow, so purely a data-driven approach. That is so true. Wow, that is incredible. Was that the point when you made a full-time switch from your tech career? Like after you bought?
No. My company was growing at that point. We knew we were about to exit. It took us a good 5 years. I mean, so I got confident. You know, I bought those homes in 2009. And so by 2010, I was like, I'm a real estate guy, man. I'm making money. So I'd proven the concept that I could do something. I could use data to buy real estate in a good way. But between, you know, 11, 12, 13, our company was preparing for sale. So obviously leaving at that point, I'd have to give up my shares. So I didn't do that. But in 11, 12, and 13, what I did was, number one, I developed a massive meetup group. I mean, people these days are happy when their meetup group has 50. I developed a meetup group where I was the primary speaker. So I'd speak 4 times a year, then bring in people 8 times a year. And I was actually doing my meetup group inside my workplace. Oh, so I got approval from my CEO. So, people are like, yeah, you know, how come you go to so many meetup groups, Neil? My answer is it's 150 feet from my office, right? It wasn't terribly hard for me to go to my meetup group. So bottom line was I was doing these meetups and I was meeting thousands of people. And firstly, I was sharing my Madera story with people, so they liked it. And then I decided to develop a system that allowed people to figure out the best cities and neighborhoods in the United States, right? So it was a programmatic system that was data-driven. Imagine I'm in Silicon Valley, right? Every guy that is showing up is a geek and a dork.
Right.
So they loved it. They were like, oh my God, this is the greatest thing since sliced bread. How much does it cost? It's like, no, it's free. Go ahead and use it. And they're like, so what are you selling? Do you have a class? It's like, no, I'm a technologist. I work for the company that you're standing in right now, right? I don't have anything to sell, right? Enjoy. So people had trouble figuring out why I was doing this stuff. And in my mind, I was like preparing for a future career, but I was just giving stuff away to build like a database and build connections and network. So that system, it took a long time for me to fully develop it. By the time it was fully developed, it was called Real Focus. And on average, there are 10,000 people a year that take my Real Focus courses. It's actually the most popular real estate course on udemy.com. You can go there. There's 1,000 five-star reviews. And so it developed into this passion of demystifying real estate. And it was never meant to be multifamily, by the way. It works brilliantly for multifamily. But when I developed it, it was for single family, right? Because everybody I was talking with was buying single family. So the goal was, if you had a list of 50 cities, if Manasa's mom said, you know, San Antonio is the best market in the US, right? So how would Manasa either prove her mom right or wrong? Right? Because 99% of the people were investing in markets that one person had told them was an awesome market, which makes no sense whatsoever from a numbers perspective, given there are 3,300 markets in the United States. And I was obsessed with finding the very best, the number one market. I wanted to be going to the very best market. And as you can imagine, it changes. So it's been St. George, Utah for a number of years. It's been Boise, Idaho. And now it's Idaho Falls in Idaho. That's the best market in the US. But what's interesting is that most people never think about this. Why would I not want to invest in the best market in the United States if it doesn't cost anymore, right? So some of these markets are cheaper. You know, Idaho Falls, when you buy a single family home in Idaho Falls, it costs one quarter of what it costs for where I live, which is the San Francisco Bay Area. So not only was it the best market in America, it was also a quarter of the price, right? And I just couldn't understand why everybody didn't do this. So I made it my mission to basically develop a system that made, you could pick up a random city that you never heard of, and in 15 minutes, you would know if it was awful to invest in or phenomenal to invest in. You could just repeat that process until you found a city that was fairly close to you that was pretty awesome. So that real focus system kind of got me notoriety. And I wasn't a real estate guy. When I developed the system, I was still, you know, a technologist. I didn't have a day job. I didn't have a real estate course. I didn't have a syndication. But I was having fun. People started inviting me to conferences and meetups and online, you know, stuff. And it sort of just snowballed where before I knew it, I had this enormous database. And people would come to me and say, what are you going to use this database for? I don't know. You know, I'm not a real estate guy. I don't know how to use this database. So people pointed out that, look, you have this incredible database. People love what you're doing, you know, transition. And as you transition, use this database. So eventually I started to learn that, use that database of investors into doing syndication. So I think 2013, 14 is when I did my first informal syndication. And then we did a 237 unit and sort of went from there. This month, I'm announcing my 18th project. So I have 17 syndications that are active. As you can imagine, some have been sold, some are about to be sold. Some we were selling a lot of them in 2020, but of course, that didn't go well. So now I have a huge number of them that are going to be on sale this year. Maybe 4 or 5 of them are going to be on sale this year because all of those were pending sales from last year. But I mean, the portfolio has grown a lot. It's about $350 million. We have 3 divisions. So there's the value add division, which is very similar to what a lot of people do. There's the development division where we build multifamily, we build industrial, we build, you know, those kinds of things. And then we have a division that is non-syndication. We just build fourplexes and people buy them. So there's no syndication, there's no splits, there's no fees. We just build fourplexes in the best cities in the United States, and people come and buy those fourplexes from us. So 3 different, you know, business lines, which I think really ties together because people love syndication, but they're like, yeah, but the problem is you guys sell it in 2 to 5 years and have to start again. You know, if I buy a fourplex, I'm probably going to hold it for 30 years, right? Our advice to people is if you buy a fourplex, never sell it. Every time you think about selling it, just refinance it, right? Pull your money out. So those in the long run are far more profitable than any syndication could ever conceive of being because, you know, once you refinance, you're at what is known as infinite return. So for the next 30 years, you're at infinite returns, right? And you're getting the depreciation for it. So I love that concept of fourplex, but not all of my investors have enough money to put down $300,000-$400,000 down payment for a fourplex. So then those people invest in syndications. They invest in, you know, $100,000 in either a development syndication, which makes more profit, or a, you know, value add syndication, which has more cash flow.
Got it. Wow. You play in a lot of areas, and that's some incredible advice for investors.
Hey, I haven't even told you about what I do outside of real estate, but never mind. That's for another show.
I would probably love to learn. I know you have the multifamily you, which is more education focused, but that's right. I would definitely love to learn more.
Yeah, we keep multifamily you pretty tight. I love teaching. My wife's a teacher, mother-in-law's a teacher, father-in-law's a teacher, sister-in-law's a teacher, my mom's a teacher. So I come from a family of educators. So teaching is in my blood. It makes no financial sense for us to basically teach through multifamily U because we could make a lot more money with our projects, you know, but education is part of the process. So we do a lot of educations. Multifamily U gets about 50,000 visitors a year and about 10,000-12,000 of them attend our webinars because we do constant webinars. You just all the time. The most popular time of the year is the second half of January when we release real estate trends. So that's our most popular event. And over a year, about 10,000 people watch real estate trends. So that's where I publish my list of cities.
Got it. Is it geared towards both active and passive investors?
It is. It is. Because, I mean, the city list, we tell people, I mean, these are places you can go buy, do stuff on your own, right? And here's a toolkit that tells you how good the city is. Even if you don't like, you know, my rankings, you can basically take the toolkit and apply it to whatever your cities are. And you never have to come back and talk to me. The toolkit updates each year in January. But they don't have to come back and talk with me. It's stored at a specific location. They can go there and grab it. So we don't try to push an investor towards being passive, towards being active. We have a community of about 10,000 people that are want to be active. They're either syndicators or wannabe syndicators. And that community is mostly addressed through our bootcamp. So we teach the bootcamp 4 times a year. We have astonishing reviews on the bootcamp. It's about a 15th of the cost of other programs in the industry. And we keep it that low because we feel like there should be a lower cost option. And it's a very technology-driven bootcamp. It's about $3,000 and we teach it 4 times a year. But everything else is really implementation. We do not like being called educators. We like being called implementers, right? With 18 active projects, we're pretty busy.
Got it. Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing that for our active and passive listeners. I'm sure that's going to be a great resource for them to go check out and learn more stuff from there.
It's got amazing webinars. It's got phenomenal webinars. I think we do about 20 of them every year. Superstars, you know, people like Bruce Norris. Bruce Norris is going to do one. He's kind of our forecasting celebrity in California. He's more of a California guy. But people like him that are pretty famous come in and do events on the platform.
Got it. So in your real estate career, like, I mean, you did follow a data-driven approach, but was it always successful or were there any big mistakes that led to significant learnings as well?
There were mistakes before I used the data-driven approach. So once I went to Madeira and made all this money, I started believing that I had the magic touch. And when people start believing that kind of nonsense, they make stupid mistakes. So I subsequently went to Chicago and basically just bought there because I knew somebody, you know, I was connected with somebody. Basically, I did the non-data-driven thing right after doing the data-driven thing. And as you can imagine, I got my ass kicked. I didn't lose any money because the market was going up, but I didn't make any money. And it took a long time to divest that portion of the portfolio. It was a nightmare. So I think what I really learned was that the path of data was always the right path. It's something that I'm schooled in. You know, I have a degree in that area. It's a computer science degree, but you know, there's an analytics specialization that I have. So it was like I was already on the right path, right? It's only when I got my head filled with my ego, thinking that somehow the magic was inside of me, that I got my butt kicked. When I came back to, I don't know shit, let's just follow what the data does, you know, and that's what's going to really, the data knows what it's doing, right? I'm just following it. And so when I came back to it, we started experiencing tremendous success. I mean, we have projects in markets that people would kill for, right? So places like Raleigh-Durham, places like Atlanta, places like Jacksonville, Phoenix, I mean, these are markets that today, everybody loves them, but obviously it's too late today, right? We're exiting projects in Atlanta. We just sold one in Atlanta. We're selling another one. We're selling in Jacksonville. So the time to go to these markets was 2 or 3 years ago. Today, it's kind of late to go into a market like Phoenix. And that's because the data gives you that 2 or 3 year advantage. I tell people I can actually see the future 24 months in advance. And when people ask me, how do you see that future? My answer is, I look at single family prices. And they're like, yeah, but you're a multifamily guy. The answer is, if single family prices in a market are going crazy, then each month, a certain percentage of people buying homes will no longer be able to afford them because the prices have gone up, right? Those are the best renters because now that they're not buying a single family home, they want to go to a very nice rehabbed, you know, multifamily, something very nicely done up, so that they don't feel bad about the fact that they missed the boat on the single family side. So I follow the single family market with an absolute obsession. At any given point of time, you can ask me what are the top growing markets. I can tell you, you know, far and away, the highest home price increases in the next year are in Idaho Falls, Idaho. But there's a few other markets, Raleigh, Durham. Durham is probably better than Raleigh. Raleigh and Durham's about 20 minutes away from Raleigh. So I follow that data. And then I go out and either build there. I'm just finishing construction in Durham because I noticed that Raleigh was becoming so expensive that Durham, which is 25 minutes away, the land was still cheap. But I looked at the home price and I'm like, these are going to go up 30 or 40%. So I built 46 townhomes that I'm now selling. And they're just selling like hotcakes. I mean, we don't have a demo unit to show. We haven't finished construction. We're already selling them at higher prices than projected. Again, the data tells you all of these things. It tells you where to go. I just feel like a lot of people talk about data, but they don't really make it part of their process.
Wow, that is so incredible. So you mentioned that you know 2 years in advance because you look at the data of the single family. Where do you get this data from? Is it through Zillow or all these sites available for single family homes?
So the best way to do that is to go to multifamilyu.com, and there's a course there called Location Magic. And it's a 60-minute course. Take it, and all the data sources are provided along with demos. Right? So you know, which area, which market should I look at? Where do I get that? Where do I get the job data? Where do I get the home price data? Where do I get the income data, crime data? All of that is provided with demos in that 1 hour course. And you notice that there's no sales pitch. Yeah. Basically, you'll just finish the 1 hour program and there's a toolkit that it comes with. You go grab your toolkit and go off, you know. And again, from what I remember, more than 50,000 people use that toolkit. Only about 500 of them are active investors with me, 1%. 1% is enough. How many syndicators have 500 investors?
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, the quality of your passive investors matters. So yeah, makes sense.
Yeah, so 1% is good enough for me. The rest of them, you know, I'm sure one day they'll say good things about me if they use my kit and it results in something useful.
I mean, sounds like you've always been driven by data after your setback in Chicago, but were there any other mistakes that happen? Like, even, I mean, data is there, but you can't rely 100% on the data, right? There is still some ambiguity to it.
I agree. And so my next mistake was that I selected the wrong partner for a particular project. So, you know, a lot of people say things like, when selecting partners, make sure first you look at ethics, right? The partner should be ethical, they should really care, all of that stuff. That makes perfect sense. I found it to be wrong. The truth is, you first have to validate their competency and then make sure that they're ethical. So the mistake that I made was I fell in love with a person because their ethics were above reproach, but I didn't really check to see if they were fully competent. I think they were people trying to do the right thing. Their heart was in the right place. But I think that they got in over their head and we had a project that went poorly because of that. So what I learned actually was when selecting partners is one of the most important things you'll do in real estate because most projects, I mean, I'm now at the point that I'm doing projects with no partners, but you know, I did 15, 16 projects involving partners. What I learned was you cannot, you know, check one of the two boxes, very competent, not enough, you know, ethical, not enough. They have to be both ethical and competent. And that's something that data cannot really get you anywhere close. So I really learned to stretch out the initial engagement process with a partner and listen to my gut feel. Because whenever I didn't, it didn't work out well for me. So I've become very good at walking away from projects because I felt like either there's an issue on the ethics side or an issue on the competency side. A lot of people just jump into bed with somebody based on one or two meetings. I don't do that anymore.
Interesting. Yeah, that is some great tip for my active and passive listeners when they pick their deal sponsor or if they want to go into business with someone else. That is really important with whom you network, whom you want to partner with. Yeah, that is very, very important. I'm going to move on to my next question. What do you think, in your opinion, is the top strategy to achieve financial freedom?
I think that understanding that the world today, as it stands today, is biased against you becoming rich. And by rich, I mean becoming truly wealthy, having control of your time. We've got a financial system where people go to school and are basically brainwashed into becoming W-2 employees. And the truth is, given the astonishing riches of the internet, the ability to work from anywhere, You know, I mean, I remember 20 years ago, setting up a business meant that in addition to being a employer, you also had to be like a server management manager, because you had to set up a server and file systems, and you had to set up, you know, email systems. Today, life is really, really simple. Everything's in the cloud, right? And you can do astonishingly powerful things for 1/5 of the price that it cost in the 80s. So the business environment actually is very supportive for people to go on their own, but less and less people are doing it. And that's because we're brainwashed that the path of the W-2 is better. I believe that there's very, very few W-2 people that are actually happy with their life, that are content with their life, because in the back of their mind, there's always this fear of losing that W-2 job. To me, I think that the path to becoming successful goes towards you moving towards financial independence, whether you do that through stocks or Bitcoin or, you know, real estate, doesn't really matter. I think what is important is that every person who wants lasting happiness needs to start in some tiny way towards financial independence. If you do not have financial independence, the goal that you can set just so that you get started on is, I'm going to create $100 a month of revenue that comes without me working for it. $100 a month. Nothing huge, nothing massive. Because I think that the act of you doing the 100 is going to rewire your brain. And you will very naturally say, okay, now I want to set a new goal for 1,000 a month, right? And before you know it, you'll set a goal for 10,000 a month, and then, you know, you've achieved financial independence. I think that most people don't understand that it doesn't matter if you make $500,000 as a technologist or $1 million as a doctor. You are not independent. You don't have freedom. All that's happened is you're now a rat running in a gilded cage. It's a gold cage, but it's still a cage. It's still a cage. $1 million doctor and a $25,000 a year receptionist are in the same exact cage. I think that the key to freedom, the key to growth, is understanding that there's no difference in the cage.
So well said. Just to add in my thoughts here, that's kind of how I started feeling in my tech job, like I have golden handcuffs, because the pay is great. I cannot complain, but it's like my job owns my time. I have to plan my whole life around it, and I've spent pretty much all the time so far trying to get it. So it's such a catch-22, because I spent so much time getting it and now I can't get out of it.
I think, and part of it is that somehow society has brainwashed us into feeling guilty when we have free time. When we don't work 50-hour weeks, we feel bad. Why should we? I mean, did Moses have an 11th commandment that broke off the tablet that says thou shalt work 50 hours? God never said that. God never had an issue with people working less. I think that we brainwashed ourselves into it. We feel this guilt. A lot of people don't start on this journey because they're almost afraid of their own success, because they're like, so I'll end up working 20 hours a week? Oh my God, that's horrible. People say all these kinds of nonsensical things to you, like retirement is no fun. No. Nobody has to retire. If you had financial freedom, most people would discover that they still want to work. I tried to retire for 3 full months in 2013. First month was awesome. Second month was okay. Third month, I was ready to kill myself. But the point is, happiness doesn't come from retirement. It comes from the option of being able to retire, right? That's what creates happiness. That pressure on your mind of your W-2 job just goes away forever. And I think that's what the goal is. I tell my kids that the goal of life is just happiness. There's no other word. Don't say happiness and this. It's just one word, and you just have to pursue it. And I don't think a W-2 job gets you there. I think it gets you closer, especially if you have a technology job, you're a doctor. The path to happiness is faster. But to think that it is happiness is nonsensical.
Right. I 100% agree. Thank you for sharing that. My last set of questions is going to be a rapid fire this or that question. So it's just your preference. Obviously, there's nothing right or wrong here. Are you ready? Would you prefer finding a deal or raising capital?
Raising capital first, then finding deals. I think that raising capital is a great way to get started.
Okay. Working in tech or real estate?
Definitely real estate. It's easier to use my technology skills in real estate than to use my real estate skills in technology.
Okay. Employee or being your own boss?
Definitely being my own boss. I think that the magic is all on that side.
Great. Thank you so much for sharing all that and being our guest today. It was wonderful having you on the show. Would you like to share anything else with our listeners or let them know how to connect with you?
Yeah, the easiest way to connect with me is to type in my name into Google. I am the only Neil Bawa, that's N-E-A-L, Bawa, B-A-W-A, on the World Wide Web. I think if you hit my name and hit enter, you'll see about 100 podcasts. There's about a dozen conferences that I've taught at that I've published my conference videos, so you can check those out. I think if you're looking for my thoughts on best cities, just type in Neil Bawa best cities, and you'll see a wide variety of content, podcasts, courses, you know, on both on my website and on the Udemy website that I think is a great place to begin with, because that data mindset, you need a coach. Most people think that they're data driven, but they're really not. I think that, you know, people give themselves too many points when it comes to being data driven. And I think that if they take the course, it'll change their mindset on not just single family, but on multifamily. You know, you're going to see the markets that you're in a completely different light. So check that out. And if you'd like to be lazy and hear what my top list of cities are for each year and why, come to multifamilyu.com in the second half of January. I'll be teaching real estate trends. So I teach that every year. Obviously, this year is much more interesting than last year, thanks to this thing called COVID. But that may be a way for you to basically get a ready-made list of cities from me.
Got it. We will make sure to have that on our show notes as well. So folks, if you like this episode, please do subscribe and leave us a review. I really want to hear what you enjoyed and what your takeaway was. So until next time, stay safe.
You've been listening to The Real Path to BYOB. Be your own boss. The 9-to-5, busting your hump for someone else, barely scraping by. With this show, that ends. We hope you've gotten some useful and practical information from this show, and we hope we've helped inspire and give you strategies to maximize your passive wealth through real estate. We'll be back soon, but in the meantime, hook up with us on Instagram at Silicon Hills Capital Group and sign up on our webpage at SiliconHillsCapitalGroup.com to be notified about upcoming webinars and get a copy of the monthly newsletter. You're on track with The Real Path to BYOB. Be your own boss.